Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I am Susan Larison-Danz of frontierbeyondfear.com, and I am so delighted to have you with us here today. Today, I have to say, right at the outset, my heart and the hearts of everyone listening, I'm sure, go out to the people in Oklahoma who are dealing with a devastating tornado. And our guest today is actually going to share some very inspiring things to give us hope in the light of such tragedies. And today's guest is a returning guest that I am always so honored and happy to have on the show. And her name is Dr. PMH Atwater. Now, PMH is one of the top near-death experience experts in the world and is, in fact, a pioneer in that field. And she has written 10 books on that subject, and then she's written even more books on other topics that have come out of that. Today, we are going to be focused upon how her research has expanded to encompass the higher consciousness of the children on the planet right now, these kids coming on the planet in about the last 30 years. PMH's recent book, Children of the Fifth World, A Guide to the Coming Changes in Human Consciousness, is a very approachable, easy-to-read guidebook that covers just a myriad of topics related to our world and the hope of these higher consciousness children, and just who they are, what their characteristics are, and just where they are taking us as a planet. PMH has also written a couple other books on these young people, and her latest book rises out of that. Now, PMH, the reason why it's such an honor to have her on this show is she has won many awards. She truly is a pioneer. She has even been on Larry King Live on CNN. And not only is she a very talented and distinguished researcher, but she lives the path of higher consciousness as a prayer chaplain and a spiritual counselor. Her website is up on the show page, pmhatwater.com, and I invite you to visit that to learn more about her. And the best way we can all learn more about her, and I really want to reintroduce her to what I know is the expanded audience for this show, is to welcome her on the line. And PMH, I am just so happy to have you back with us today.
Well, it's fun to be here.
Yes, I always enjoy the depth of your insights and how you go about your path so enthusiastically. You can always tell when someone's working in the joy of their passion by just, you know, just all the wonderful things that you're doing in the world. So thank you for being here today.
I tend to laugh a lot.
You know, I think we both do more and more. That seems to be spreading. So I appreciate that. Now, today, we are really going to be talking about these higher consciousness children, and it's quite an in-depth topic, but we both felt that a nice way to enter into this topic today is because so many people have the Joplin, Missouri tornado on their minds because of the anniversary yesterday, as well as, you know, how so many people, including children, were impacted in Moore, Oklahoma. And I was wondering, PMH, if we could start this show by talking a little bit about the butterfly people, something I know you studied and you do mention in your book as well.
Well, I'd be very happy to do that because what's happening now in Moore, Oklahoma, certainly grabs all of our hearts.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, what happened in Joplin, Missouri, same thing, equally grabs our hearts. Now, I talk about this, I broach this in the book, Children of the Fifth World. When I talk about the butterfly people, Todd Frankel, a reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, got a hold of me, it was a number of months after the Joplin tornado hit. And he kept hearing all these reports of children, in the tornado disaster. They kept talking about the butterfly people. And he wanted to know how credible this was. He was writing an article about it, and he all kinds of questions, and I can certainly understand his puzzlement. But I said, one of the things that you can tell that this is probably a genuine witnessing or narrative or story is that these young children are using the term butterfly people instead of angels. If it's young children, very seldom will a young child ever use the word angel. It has to be an older child, teenager, adult, or a child that's been exposed to that term a lot. Young kids don't use that term. They say something like the bright people or the loving ones or just the people. They don't use terms like angels. So these little kids in Joplin, Missouri, were talking about angels. And what they were saying is that either as the tornado was sucking them or trying to suck them out of their car with their parents holding on for dear life to keep them from being sucked up by the tornado, or if they were around the tornado, the tornadic winds in the house, around the trees, these kids kept seeing butterfly people. That is to say, teeny-weeny people that look to them like butterflies. So it's sort of like, the marker we have or the image we have for fairies. That is to say, kind of like a being, a person with wings. So they call them the butterfly people. And the butterfly people were there to help them and to keep them from being sucked up into the tornado. And there were so many kids that saw these butterfly people. They were just all over the tornado. Now, of course, it's too soon to tell if the children around Moore, Oklahoma, saw the same thing. But the kids around Joplin did. And of course, that resulted in a newspaper article that appeared in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. But among these children who saw the butterfly people specifically was Ari Hallmark. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Ari because she fits right in with the new kids that we'll soon be discussing. Of course, she is one of them.
Uh-huh.
And Ari was right in the thick of it. She saw her parents, her paternal grandparents, and a cousin all killed and sucked up in the tornado. So five of her family. And she was the only one in that huddle that were trying to survive, that did survive. And she also saw the butterfly people trying to save her, at least, trying to save the others, but they were unable to. She went up into the tornado. That is to say, in my opinion, she had a near-death experience. She was very much part of that trauma and was sucked up into the tornado in the sense of her soul. And she made a very important comment on what she saw there. because her father was bald. And when she got up there, her father had hair.
Oh, my.
You get these reports a lot in near-death cases. Is that once the person has died and got on the other side, the deformities, whatever deformity they had in life, disappears and they are whole again. Ari made that very important comment that her father, who was bald, had hair again. And another very important part of Ari's story, and by the way, she wrote a little book about it, and I'll tell you about that book in just a minute, but another important part of Ari's story is that she knew 2 months before this ever happened that she was going to lose her parents in a tornado.
Wow.
She knew
it. That's amazing.
She knew they were going to die. And so instead of telling them or telling anybody else, she enjoyed their company. She enjoyed being with them. And she became even closer to them because she knew she only had 2 months left to enjoy them. So she did. Now, look at that kind of intelligence. Look at that kind of wisdom and foreknowledge. She knew what was going to happen.
And
she had
a sense of peace. Yes, and a peaceful.
She had a five-casket funeral.
Yes.
You know, both parents, both paternal grandparents, and a cousin. And she refused to call any of the caskets a casket. She called them all treasure boxes.
Oh.
Each of her family members were in a treasure box, and that's where they were placed, the treasure box in the ground. Now, she wrote a book about all of this. It has pictures, notes, everything. It's called To Heaven After the Storm. It's by Ari Hallmark. That should be available by now, certainly, over Amazon.com.
Yes.
I forgot to look.
Yeah, I'll look for that.
If you can't find it on Amazon.com, you can get it from where I did. It's a Christian bookstore called Heaven Bound. It's in Arab, Alabama. And the phone number is 256-931-2053. Again, the book is To Heaven After the Storm by Ari Hallmark. And this is such an important book. You know, about her foreknowledge, how she handled that foreknowledge, the fact that that she saw her father completely restored up inside the tornado, where she went as a soul to see what was happening to her family, and that she calls the coffins treasure boxes.
How old is Ari?
Ari was 6 years old when this happened. She was a first grader.
Okay. That's remarkable. And how, you know, imagine how knowing you were, there would be a tendency in a kind of lower consciousness way, I guess, to cling, and, you know, those final days with your parents. Imagine the maturity, PMH, the spiritual maturity it exhibits. For her to simply
appreciate them. Most of the new kids have that. And by the way, I say new kids instead of higher consciousness kids or evolved kids. I like to remind people that this is evolutionary. You know, this new species that has been predicted for decades and decades is now here. This quantum leap. And with the human species, we're making this quantum leap in evolution. And I like to remind everybody, when the tide comes in, all boats rise. So it doesn't matter whether the child is you know, somehow super intelligent or super different or super intuitive. They're still different. They are still changed. They are still unlike previous generations. Some, of course, are more so than others, but this bump, this rise, is happening to all of them, all our kids. Started about 1982, but, you know, if we're going to be really, really honest about what's happening here with the pattern of the new kids, that is to say their pattern of characteristics and traits, you know, who they are, it's really happening to all of us in the sense that we're all human beings. The entire human race is rising now in consciousness, in awareness, in intelligence. This pattern, and I can trace it to the pattern of root races, R-O-O-T. This old esoteric tradition, commonly placed in Theosophy, Edgar Cayce, some of the other places that talked about root races, or the idea of life streams or life rays, the idea then that evolution has come in large sweeping cycles, and that the human race has gone through these huge cycles, and that we're now in the fifth one. What I recognize here is that this fifth root race, which has actually been around for a little while, is actually coming into ascension. It's completing itself. It's at its greatest point now, and certainly will continue to be in the decades to come. So this huge jump in the human race. You know, when we're talking about the fifth root race, we're talking about the masters of communication, the masters of creativity, the masters of higher intuition, the masters of innovation. We're talking about true ascension. And what I've been able to see and have a pulse on, keep the pulse on, is that this pattern of the fifth root race has now crossed population groups and land masses. It is truly global. So I remind everybody again, when the tide comes in, all boats rise. So, you know,
and it's inspiring.
We're getting it everywhere. But if we're going to be really, really honest, though, we need to recognize that this pattern has been coming on for a long time. This, you know, you can trace it back to the times of Jesus. Weren't that many people with that pattern then, but a few.
Yeah.
All of the renaissances the world has ever known has just been filled with this particular patterning. And in fact, you know, who do you think ever started the Renaissance to begin with? It was
right.
This pattern of the fifth root race. And they started heavily coming into the world in the 1800s, and especially from 1840 on. That is to say, the tradition of the New Thought movement, people like Ernest Holmes and Charles and Myrtle Fillmore and Thoreau and Emerson, all of these people are fifth root race people. They are all the founders of the New Thought movement, and you know, all of them had that pattern. And it was kind of quiescent in the 20s and 30s. And, you know, we started seeing it coming in again, you know, in the 60s and in the 70s. But it wasn't until about 1982, I would say, that the floodgates opened wide. And that's all we're getting now, I think. At least in my opinion, that's what we're getting now, is this pattern to one degree or another, to whatever degree, this is us, this is who we are, this is what the human race is becoming.
And I think many of us are saying it's about time, because
yes.
I know in your book you talk about this concept of a healing crisis, and you know, the world, even more so since we talked last time, PMH, last year. You know, the last time we talked, we were right on the verge of the whole 2012 thing, wondering what would happen in December 2012, and everyone was speculating about that. And yet, you know, we look around the world, the crises have actually escalated in the last several months. And, you know, even astronomical things going on, I mean, these comets and these asteroids, you know, there's the solar flares. And you know, it just seems like now is the time for these kids, and they are here to respond to that.
Well, yeah, I'm also an astrologer.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't always tell everybody that, but yes, I'm also an astrologer. And the year's 2013 to 2015. So we're right in the middle of that.
Uh-huh.
It's just one big, huge change, turnover, crises, potential outburst after another, both positive and negative. We're getting hit left and right. And, you know, I really see the purpose of this as really forcing we as human beings, certainly all of us, but especially the new kids, to really be honest and say, the old way isn't working. We've got to find a new way of doing this. And this is exactly what's happening now. We've got
yes.
people coming forward now, new ways of making water clean and fresh, new ways of making highways and roads, new ways of making ovens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just goes on and on and on. It's like we human beings, if we're stuck in a corner, we're going to find a different way of doing things because we have to.
Yes. I mean, if we either, it's getting to the point where we must evolve. I think it's becoming very apparent to many adults. And, you know, the fascinating thing, and I'm a parent of a teen, and I enjoy watching these teens. I drive them home. I'm with them because I'm the one who drives them around at times. And when you're among them, you can just kind of feel the sorts of things that they're thinking about. And you know what's so interesting, PMH? Like the careers these kids are thinking of pursuing, they're much different. They're not like we were. They have just much broadened horizons. They may not go after the practical thing. They don't care if something's going to pay a lot of money. I mean, it's how are you going to change the world? How are you going to make a contribution? And I find that so inspiring. And they're so involved.
They're absolutely
infused
with that. Yeah, they're absolutely infused with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're
volunteers.
They're
here to make a difference. They're here
yes.
to grow as a collective.
Yes.
They very much consider themselves a group. They tend to think as a group. They're very much into relationships and the collective. And certainly the Internet helps that, things
yes.
like Facebook and Twitter and all that. Helps them to be connected, but they find ways of being connected anyway, one way or another, because that's who they are.
Yes.
They're groupies.
Well, and they're always in communication. In fact, I have a question for you right off the top of my head that came to me.
Okay.
Is these kids, they're constantly in communication with each other. And you know, PMH, it's almost as if it's a step into the human race becoming telepathic. I mean, truly telepathic. I know there are signs of it all over the place, but the way they are in instant communication with each other all the time, these kids, I wonder if it isn't, I mean, you can almost see how we're just going to step to the next level at one of these days. And then
well, it's almost
already
like a
stepping
pulse.
Into that.
Right.
Yes.
It's almost like a pulse that goes out and they get it.
It is.
You know, whether or not they get all the words or not, they're getting that pulse, they're getting that feeling, they're getting that sensation, and they're responding to it, and they're responding to it right away.
Yes.
You know, I'd like to take a look here, a look-see, at the positive, well, I should say the minus and the plus side of this pattern of of kids. You know, if you're looking at the plus side, and I really kind of hesitate to use words like positive and negative because those are judgment terms, but let's look at you know, plus and minus. And we're looking at the plus side. You know, these kids are intelligent even if they can't spell. And even if they're flunking in school, these kids are smart kids. But about one-third of them are geniuses, even if learning disabled. I want to take a little time off here to emphasize this, that if you have the child, let's see, for instance, if the child is autistic or some other learning disorder, have them take the Raven's test instead of the Wechsler test. The Wechsler test is the standard IQ. The standard IQ test will test crystallized intelligence, what you've learned. The Raven's test tests fluid intelligence, what you can learn. Now, with the standard test, we know now, and it's been holding true for over a decade, that one-third of those kids who take that test in nations that administer it, so we're talking globally, and as much as, you know, the various nations that actually administer the test, one-third of the kids who take it ever since about 1982, one-third of the kids who are taking this test are scoring between 150 to 160 and above.
Wow.
Now, if these learning disabled kids, especially autistic kids, are able to take the Raven's test, we're getting the same score, Susan.
Uh-huh.
One-third are scoring between 150 to 160. So these so-called learning disabled kids are simply coming in a different form, responding to a different way of languaging and learning and communicating. They're really testing us in ways that we've never been tested before. These kids are very music-oriented. All kids are rhythmic and music-oriented, but these kids are even more so. They're unusually creative and spiritually minded. They're intuitive. They're psychic. Many remember past lives. That's common. That's ordinary with these kids. That's not a phenomenon at all. And I want people to know that. They're excellent with math. Don't let them fool you. They're natural healers. They're ready to go entrepreneurs. They're irreverent. They're quirky. And they're unique.
They're quirky.
They're visionary problem solvers. They're very knowing. They're volunteer-minded. They're humanitarians. Well, I've already said they're groupies and move as if part of a collective. They often attend night school in addition to dreaming. Let me just quickly give an example of this, because I wasn't clear what night school was. I just figured it was another form of dreaming. No, it's not. I was in a mall, a large mall, and there was a woman standing next to me with her son. I would guess he was about maybe six, seven years old. And way down the hall was a mom and dad and their boy, maybe about the same age. And these two youngsters called each other by name, ran to each other, hugged each other, and discussed the assignment they were given last night in night school. Now, the catch is, hold on to your hat, Susan, the catch is, the mom and her son standing next to me were local. the other couple with their son were tourists. They were just passing through.
Wow.
They'd never been there before.
That's a synchronicity that those, they probably planned that at a synchronistic level to
I don't
be
know
in the
if it
same
was
place
planned,
at the same time.
There
right
they were.
At a higher level.
There they were.
Wow.
You know, there's no way that you can say that this is ordinary dreaming. This
no,
is,
I wouldn't
this is
say.
Different. These kids, excuse me, sorry about that. These kids abstract at very young ages. They're spatial learners. Now let's spend just a little bit of time with what I mean by abstracting, because these kids start dealing with concepts at a very, very young age. Let's take Michaela. She's 2.5 years old. She's having a discussion with her mom, and she gets disgusted. She gets very angry, and she marches up to her mother, takes her finger, pointer finger, and, you know, just sort of catches her mother's attention and wiggles it and waggles it at her mother and says, "I don't know the word for that yet." Now, what 2.5-year-old can comprehend the fact that they don't know the words
that's
of something
amazing.
They want to say? You know, that's abstraction. Let me give you another example from my near-death cases. This is a boy, first grader, 6 years old, in Atlanta, Georgia. He drowned about halfway through school year and was resuscitated. When he was able to get back in school, now stop and think, what are they reading at first grade level? It's Dick and Jane.
Yes.
The
yes.
Spot Run. Got it?
Yes.
He comes back in reading Greek mythology and understands what he's reading. I don't know why my voice is going, but it is.
Uh-huh.
And then he said to the teacher, why was the book Robinson Crusoe ever written?
You know, that is something, you know, these kids, they seem to analyze literature at a greater depth. I mean, that's something I've observed just seeing essays. And by the way, if you need to get a glass of water or something,
I don't
feel
know if that'll
free.
Make a difference, but I'm going to take a little sip here.
It's allergy season. It's allergy season, I'm afraid. I've had this a little bit myself.
I'll bet that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you've got it there.
Yeah, I'm kind of
okay.
Holding it today, too.
but it's just remarkable, and I'm going to say this worldwide. These children are coming in knowing and able to abstract at very young ages. I would say from the age of 2 on, most of them are talking at very young ages. Most of them know the future before it's going to occur, at least little bits and parts of the future, maybe a few hours before, a few days before. They're very, very good at this. So these kids are conceptualizing at unheard of ages, and that makes them very difficult to raise. That makes them challenging to be around.
Yeah.
Even discussing things with them, you feel like you're talking to maybe a graduate of college instead of a seventh grader, or maybe a fourth grader. There's a fusion of sexes going on. They're very much into gender mixing. They're multisensory, multi-channelers who live in a multiverse. You've got to realize, and most of us don't, that all of these kids since 1982 see the world first through a screen.
Yeah, that's hard for us to comprehend.
Yes. Yeah. They
it's
see
true.
The
Look
world first through
read.
A screen, not
yes.
by going out the door,
yes,
not
yes.
by going out the door and playing in nature, but by viewing the world through a screen. So they think differently to begin with. Now let's look on the minus side. They're impulsive and impatient. They feel entitled. Most of them are overconfident. They are ultimate consumers. You'll find that there's an underlying anger in these kids. Not the kind of anger maybe that you and I would have, but they have little tolerance for lies or manipulation. You know, they're going to get right on Facebook right away, right on Twitter right away, and they're going to reveal everything because they have no tolerance for holding things back. They prefer the astral and synthetic worlds. And they're highly sensitive to drugs and snack foods and processed foods. You know, it's a big one for parents. They're highly sensitive to toxic or incoherent electronic energy. That's another a big one that I discuss at length in the book. How do you handle computers? How do you handle television? How do you handle all these electronic devices? And let me just insert in here right away while we're still thinking about it that one of the things we've noted is that if you keep the children away from all of this stuff until the age of two, then they'll have a lot better ability to adjust. Just forget about it. If you expose these children to things like television, let's say, for instance, using TV as background noise in your home, computers, all this kind of stuff, it really cuts their ability for languaging, the ability to use words, know words. So up until the age of two, it's an absolute no-no on the screens. Then after the age of two, you can introduce it little by little by little. Over time, little by little, until their puberty. And once they reach puberty and are maybe using a few hours a day or whatever by that time, once they reach puberty, their brain after that seems far better able to adjust to the challenges of the digital age. But up until then, another thing you might lose with these kids is the ability to abstract and know things, just know, or to even reason. So that's lots of reasons here to be very careful about exposing these children little by little. Absolutely no TV set in their bedroom. Never, ever, ever. No computer in their bedroom. Never, ever, ever. And at nighttime, no cell phones, no electronic devices at all. They can have a clock. They can have a radio. That's it. Anything else makes a significant change in brain structure and brain function, and very, very much not for the better. So be very careful in those particular time frames. These kids do not handle nutrition well. So, you may find that you'll have to test each one of them separately because it won't be the same for each one. You know, just because the food's organic does not necessarily mean that it will be good for that particular child. You have to test them separately. They have no concept of authority. They need mentors and not bosses. They appear wiser than they are. Get this, self-deception is a major issue with these kids. That's why they need mentors. Yep.
So they think that they know it all, essentially, even more than teens of the past.
Yeah. They really need mentors. They're sensitive to trickster energy, you know, that possessive, attaching kind of yucky stuff that we can get from the spirit world. They're very sensitive to that. They do not understand the effort needed to process or refine. This is why we have so much trouble with these kids respecting copyrights or trademarks. They don't understand this stuff. You know, to them, everything is free. Everybody should have it all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and share. They don't recognize that it takes hours and years and just incredible effort to refine your talents and your skills and your learning, and that people have a right to be paid for that. And these kids don't understand that at all. They expect things to come to them. They do not recognize boundaries, even that of skin. And their greatest fear, hold on here, their greatest fear is silence.
Huh.
Yep.
And what happens when there's silence? What happens? Why are they so afraid?
Oh, they panic. They panic. They don't know what to do with that. They've got to fill it with some kind of noise.
Yeah. And that's so true. I've observed that.
Yeah. They can't handle silence.
Do you think, PMH, that this whole copyright thing, as you were talking about that, I was thinking about, you know, some of the biggest advocates, even the young man, he was said to have committed suicide. He was an advocate, Aaron Swartz, and for this, for open sharing. Could it be that they are seeing a world where there's no money? I mean, that you honor people for their ideas, but that could it be that they're looking ahead at a time when we're just openly sharing of our talents somehow? Go ahead.
They're certainly thinking in terms of new ways of doing things, new ways of handling money, new types of money, new ways of forming businesses, corporations, new ways of running them. And they're going to lock horns. I predict it. They're going to lock horns with every boss, every politician, every leader of every country. They're going to lock horns again and again and again and again because they don't go along with the program, or they see that it should be different, that maybe they can do it this way. And if they can't turn things around, they're very much predisposed to going the other way, either doing it themselves or turning to crime. You know, hold on here about the thirds. And I talk a lot about thirds in the book, Children of the Fifth World, because it's stunning. One third of these kids have a gene mutation to build a better brain. One third, of course, are geniuses. Even with autistic kids, one third who take the Ravens test turned out to be geniuses.
Yeah.
Three thirds of the kids with autism are male. One third are female. It's the reverse with dyslexia. About three fourths are female. Two thirds here.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, two-thirds of the kids with autism are male, one-third are female. It's the reverse with dyslexia. About two-thirds are female, one-third are male. One-third have no sense of living a full life. And you know, they're comfortable with that. It's no big deal. Two-thirds have no intention of ever marrying, going to college, or becoming a parent. One-third are profoundly gifted. One-third are intelligent, intuitive, creative. And one-third are amoral, too violent to handle.
Huh.
So we're getting all these thirds. I think we need to look at this because this has been going on for over a decade. I've been keeping track of these stats, and they're getting tighter and tighter instead of spreading out. So that tells me we got to look at this. What does it mean by all these thirds? Well, thirds That's the baseline of universal order. When things come in thirds, they're built in thirds, they appear in thirds. That's the baseline of universal order, beauty, and harmony. One-thirds. That's the golden rule. That's in sacred geometry. You run into that over and over and over again. So when I look at that, when I look at the consistent patterning of thirds, then I'm saying, hey, there's another force at work here. There's another plan, a greater plan that's going on here. Whether we want to admit it or not, you can call it God's plan. You can call it a universal plan. I look at this, and there's no way I can call this accidental. There's no way that I can call this happenstance. It's just so continuous and so constant, these thirds. I have to look at that and say, there's another hand at work here. A greater hand, a greater plan.
It's like the multiverse gives us hints, PMH, by establishing these patterns. And there are a lot of patterns. And that seems to be what you're observing, that there are undeniable patterns. Now, I have a question with regards to the amoral children, which, of course, is a troubling thing. How can we respond as a society or as parents? You know, if we're in a situation as a parent where we have a child that doesn't appear to be empathic, is there anything those parents can do, and how can we grow as a society to try to deal with that?
Well, of course, I'm not a doctor, so I can't give you that kind of answer. But what I can say that I've noticed with a lot of these kids is that it's the way they're raised sometimes, or many of them just seem to come in this way. So I'm looking at how they're fed, how they're treated, what they're exposed to. Many times you can catch little signs and signals that said, wait a minute here, this child is always killing pets, or this child is always hurting animals. You know, that's usually a clue. If the child is excessively doing this, or excessively in trouble all the time, even at a very, very young age. Sometimes they come in this way, sometimes they become this way. And look at the child abuse that's rampant in our country. Also look at the fact, and none of us want to do this, we don't want to do this, but I'm here to say we got to look at everything, the good and the not so good. Right now, in the world, the third highest paying, the third highest paying industry is sexual slavery.
Yes. It's rampant. That's true.
It's
very sad.
Even with local.
And we don't want to look at it. You're true. You're so right. As
you don't
society,
you don't want to look at it.
We try to sweep that. And yet I've heard, you know, you see it. There are stories. We had a story in our newspaper here in Oregon not too long ago about the highway that runs through here and you know, the girls that are essentially enslaved. Even here, you know, it's right in our midst, and it's not just girls. I mean, this is really, it is a topic that we want. Yes,
too.
Unfortunate.
Yeah.
And we are in denial about that as adults. I feel you're right. And these kids are being taken advantage of. It's as if, you know, there are people who know how to manipulate these kids. It seems that's the only theory I would have, you know, approaching it. I'd be curious, you know, what does it all mean?
Well,
PMH,
children in general are easy to manipulate.
Yes,
because they're sort of inborn with that instinct to obey or mind the parent. or the
right.
the authority right. figure, because that's where they get their sustenance. You know, so they're going to sort of cuddle up to whoever is that inborn parent or mentor or someone that they can trust. And children do this just naturally.
Yeah, of course.
So it's going to be up to us to report it. And you know, they always say, follow your intuition. Listen to your intuition. If something is going on that doesn't seem right, tell somebody. Don't wait. And, you know, certainly we've been getting this in the news lately with all these things that have been going on. Don't wait. Tell someone immediately. This is going to be extremely helpful with our children. But, yeah, there's another thing that I'm noticing with our children, and that is that we're not putting them to work. You know, when you and I were young, certainly when I was young, you were expected to do so much work. That is to say, in your house, chores, jobs that you were expected to do. We don't expect that much from these kids when they're little. We expect them to mind, certainly, get good grades. We want them to learn. We want them to behave well. We want to teach them manners and all this kind of stuff. But we don't have jobs for them. Now, certainly when I was a kid, you know, you could be a newsboy or a newsgirl, and, you know, you could toss newspapers on people's lawns and make money for it. But I'm not necessarily talking about that. There's all kinds of jobs kids can do, and they should be expected to do the dishes. They should be expected to help cook, teach them cooking, teach them sewing, teach them gardening at very young ages. And in the garden, hey, if you're going to eat the food, you have to care for the food. So you have all these little rules and participation that you can do as a family. And that makes such a difference with discipline, with creativity, with interest. When they see that it's not just them that's doing it, it's everybody, you know, is pitching in, or they have their job, it's on the icebox. You know, you can tell how old I am. We used to call them ice boxes. On the refrigerator.
Yeah.
You know, put the jobs on the refrigerator. In other words, these kids need to be busy. They need to do something. And by golly, most of them have that volunteering instinct where they will quite naturally want to get involved and want to help people. So let's help them and put them to work, you know. And this idea of payment, money, from the very first, as soon as you can, introduce these kids to money. By that I mean put the money in their hand. It's not digits on a piece of paper or a computer. It is coins and bills in their hand. You know, your hand has lots of nerve endings. Put it in your hand. They have to get a feel for money. Now, if anything's going to be bought for them, the money goes in their hand. They go to the clerk. They pay for it. They get the money back in their hand, and then they give it to mom and dad. They have to be part of this process of what money can do and what money feels like. They need to start savings accounts very, very early. Any money they're given needs to be divided up, or it would be helpful if it's divided up like this. 10% off the top goes to be to some kind of spiritual organization or nonprofit charity. 10% off the top always goes to others. 40% can go to whatever it is they want or they're saving for or they'd like to have. Another 40% goes for college or school, whatever they're planning in a big way in the future. But that final 10% always goes in long-term savings that cannot be touched until they're maybe in their 30s or 40s. Always goes into long-term savings. Kids need to realize, even young, that they need to have long-term money, i.e. retirement. The days when we didn't have that are gone. And it's going to get that way even more and more as economies change.
Do you
We've
think
got
these kids
to start
are,
that saving habit.
Do you think these kids are distrustful of the banking system? Because I've kind of noticed, I mean, adults are distrustful, and so they might be resistant to doing things in traditional ways because maybe they don't trust the bank that the money's
Look,
in, you know, or the stock
passport,
market.
If they have that savings passport in their hand, in their room, believe me, they're going to be proud.
Yeah.
That's
oh,
their
they seem
money.
That way. Yes, I think
yeah.
I have observed that. Once, you know, there's kind of a dichotomy, though. There seems to be a distrust just in general, and maybe it's rightfully earned, I mean, in being aware of
well,
the current
you
situation.
You know, they have this inborn anger, dear. You
yeah.
know, this frustration with the way things are. So the savings plan can be, according to the parents at first, it can be changed as the children grow and discern for themselves, hey, I don't trust this. I want to put my money over here, or I want to invest it, or my way of investing it is I want to start a job. You know, that's what a lot of these kids are doing. Even at the age of 4, Susan, a lot of these kids are starting up their own business.
Yes.
Their
that's
own
amazing.
Business. Maybe in their
That's
bedroom,
amazing.
Maybe over the internet, they advertise it, promote it. And and many of them, by the time they're 15, 16, have paid for their college. These are smart kids. Some of them start their, you'd be amazed at some of the businesses these kids start. Some of them start a street repair business. Some of them start a landscaping business. Maybe they're 12 or 13. It's amazing what these kids are doing and getting patents for or copyrights for. You know?
I think we're seeing it in the science fairs. You know, these
sure.
kids now, they're involved in these robotics competitions. I've observed that firsthand where they're just coming up with all different ways of creating, essentially. And they're innovative. I have seen these things coming out of these science fairs where they're actually making breakthroughs, these kids, by looking in a new way. I mean, it really
right.
is remarkable. I think it's coming up in the news quite often, just verifying what you're saying, PMH. It's phenomenal.
Right. And what I said before, that they need mentors, they need guides,
yeah.
they need somehow someone to give them some hints and, you know, help them to tinker in the garage and make things and do things. This is what I mean. They've got to do things. They've got to involve their hands and their feet, not just their eyes in that computer or that, you know, touchpad of you know, iPad or whatever. They've got to use their own body more. If they're inventing, if they're experimenting. And one of the things I really, really recommend is to get these kids in some kind of psychic school. By that I mean some kind of campus, some kind of retreat, some kind of program that helps them learn how to handle their abilities in a practical, easy, comfortable, and knowledgeable way. Now, the ARE, which is the Association for Research and Enlightenment, every summer has what they call their kids' summer camp, where they do this kind of thing. But there's another opportunity, and that's called the Profound Awareness Institute. That is Nancy Baumgarten. Now, all kinds of footnotes about her are in the book Children of the Fifth World. She runs all year long all kinds of opportunities for the creative, spiritual, and essential intelligences of kids and animals and plants and nature and all this kind of stuff. She's phenomenal. Her website is www.psykids.org. That's PSYKIDS. So it's www.psykids.org. And what she's doing in the way of bioscience and mystic wisdom is just, I hope it becomes a pattern worldwide for teachers and parents to use. She's really come up with just remarkable stuff. You know, I'd like to help our parents here a little bit and give them some tips. Would that be helpful, you suppose, right now?
Absolutely. I have one question, though. Do you think there really is a call on the grassroots level? You know, when I was growing up PMH, everybody, the parents were all holding little Bible things and, you know, things associated with standard religions. And yet, is there maybe a call on a grassroots level for parents to be creating things, you know, activities for these kids in the local communities?
Well, certainly, creative activities. And to get these kids involved in yoga, get these kids involved in meditation and prayer, help them to develop their spiritual natures. This is a huge, huge need. And a need that is being answered in many ways by various schools, believe it or not. Hold on to your hat here. Let me give you a little factoid here that is absolutely true, that I hope catches on worldwide. What they have found, now this is science, or, you know, scientific, been scientifically verified. What they have found in schools is if the school, doesn't matter what school, doesn't matter what age, if the school will observe 15 minutes of silence in the morning and 15 minutes of silence in the afternoon. This is for teacher and student. 15 minutes of silence in the morning, 15 minutes of silence in the afternoon. Test scores will improve over 80%.
Wow. Such a simple
interest,
thing.
Inventiveness. It is just, it blows your mind. What all of us, especially our new children, are capable of doing if their potential is freed. This is how you free potential, through silence, through meditation, through contemplation, through being in nature, through taking a walk. You've got to get away from the digital stuff at least for a while. And get out in the world, whether it be external or internal to you.
Yes.
And this business of silence is a gem.
Yes.
It is recreating our schools. It is recreating our people. It will go on to recreate our world.
Yes.
And it's just that simple. Silence.
You know, it's so simple, and yet isn't it amazing how even as adults we fail to listen to
to that advice, and if we could all just embrace that. And you know, as you're talking, PMH, and I'm sure this will enter into the tips that you have for parents. A lot of parents right now, this time of year, if you're listening at this time of year, it's a podcast, people listening many times, we're entering into the summer, and parents have kids that are thinking, okay, you know, what summer activities? And as you're speaking, I literally see in my mind's eye these kids just in silence and appreciating nature, getting these kids out to nature.
Yeah, watch a cloud go by.
Yeah. You know, we did that more as kids and, you know, maybe encouraging that. And, you know, the other thing I see, and I know I was very fortunate being here at least part of the time in the Pacific Northwest and actually even in the Midwest, and I'm curious how you would feel. It seems like art, they really respond. There was a,
oh, yeah.
There's a camp here that's
creativity.
In the woods that,
yeah.
that, you know, it's both nature and creativity. In fact, I'll
yeah.
even name it. Just it's called Willowbrook, and it's in the Portland area. If you're listening in the Portland area and you're a parent, look up Willowbrook because it's out in the park, and those kids are just doing art and, you know, creative activities, and they're out in nature. So anyway, and I'm not even really plugging them per se, but they deserve some recognition because it
oh,
really is responding to their spirit. Yeah, it's
I
don't even have just look up Willowbrook Art Camp, I think it is, or it's more than art though. They do other expressive things, and you know, and it's quite mainstream. It's not on the surface a spiritual thing, and yet the thing is I immediately recognized as a spiritually oriented parent just what they were fostering in these kids, and the fact that it's outdoors and. And it they have no electronics. Get this, at Willowbrook, it is a completely creative exercise. I mean, leave it
there's
to Oregon. That would be the Pacific Northwest spirit. And you know, we just rejected fluoride here again in Portland, and there were a lot of young people involved in that. You know, talk about
yeah.
kids getting focused on their health, and you know, here the. The anti-GMO, I know I'm bringing up a few things, and I want to jump into the parental tips because as you were talking about nutrition, I mean, I'm thinking, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
how do these kids respond to GMOs? I mean, that's a huge campaign. It's been very active here and in California and all around the world. You know, I think that these kids probably
more
don't
power
respond
to
well
them.
To GMOs.
Yeah, more power
yeah.
to them. We need
so,
more.
Yeah, it's so true. But with all that said, yes, definitely. Let's spend some time let's see how we're doing. I knew we'd talk and talk. I love talking with you, PMH. It's true. I do. We've got about 20 minutes left. And so, yes, please.
But we've still got a lot we can
tips.
Cover.
We do. Tips for parents. I think they're looking for, the, you know, either both going into the summer, that's a big area, and then just in general, what can we tell parents and new parents? You have a lot to say in your book about these kids before they're born. So please enter into that topic for us.
Oh, okay. Parents, do not be shocked or upset by your children's natural psychic ability. Take it in stride. Again, it's natural. Do not be upset by their ability to occasionally know the future. Be objective and detached. Maintain control and discipline through cleverness, not punishment. Bargain, negotiate, and compromise. Keep them busy with chores, no payment, with projects, crafts, trips, volunteerism, senior citizen centers, gardens, care for animals. Have your cookies molded by hand. Do food sculpture. In other words, we got to get the hands involved here.
Yeah.
I've already talked about allowance. And how to handle money. Have firm rules of the turf. Parents have quiet rooms. Kids have quiet rooms. Privacy is earned. teach ethics, questioning, anger management, philosophy, the earlier the better. I'm a great believer in philosophy in the third grade and school courts. These kids know how to handle punishment, crime and punishment. They really know, they know how to handle that. You always want a mentor, i.e. the teacher, but these kids can handle it in class courts. Encourage entrepreneurship. They can have their own business, make their own products, learn how to market. Limit to television and computers, Game Boys, cell phones, digital devices of any kind. Teach them to verify their, they must verify their truth. In other words, it's not enough to just know something. You've got to verify it. You know, that wonderful, wonderful Russian proverb that says, trust but verify. You always have to go that second step. Embrace the spiritual. Exercise together, say grace before meals, pray, contemplate, teach them tolerance with interfaith religious practices, watch your sugar and salt levels, food allergies, digestion. Fungus in the home is a big one, and it'll be big in your part of the world because your humidity is so high.
We have a lot of mold problems here.
Toxic metals, insulation. Touch a lot. Give love pats. Your family gatherings, celebrate. They need a lot of celebration, a lot of rituals, a lot of family get-togethers. This is very, very important for these kids. Remember, they're groupies anyway. So, you know, they need that kind of thing.
Yes.
Also, I want to say concerning learning disorders, because they're picking up. They're not going down. They're getting to be more and more and more of them and affecting more and more of the population. I want to say a couple of things about that. First of all, I want to say all of you parents out there, ADD, ADHD, Asperger's syndrome, autism, whatever the learning disorder, get the book Kids Beyond Limits. That's the name of it. It has a very, very long secondary name, but the first name is short. Kids Beyond Limits. It's by Annette Benel. Let me spell that. A-N-A-T. That's the first name. Last name, B as in boy, A-N-I-E-L. It's like Daniel, only it's Benel. She has come up with a way of treating these kids using natural touch and listening and learning methods that have proven so spectacularly effective that it is awesome. So I'm recommending this again and again and again. Kids Beyond Limits by Annette Benel. I don't know if you remember, I don't know if you're old enough to remember the days when polio was the big thing with kids. It wasn't learning disorders, it was polio.
That's before my time. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know era, certainly.
It's very much in my time. And I got polio, too. I mean, kids were dropping everywhere. I happened to get a lighter case of it, but
yeah.
I was one of those that were dropped with a big epidemic of polio. What arose in response to that was this incredible woman who came out of Australia. Sister Kenny. We called her Sister Kenny. And she developed a way of using heat and exercise, certain ways of handling adults or children who had polio, and she could keep them out of the iron lungs. She could keep them out of all the iron braces. She was able to get a turnaround in cure rates or dealing rates with the crippling effects of polio that was spectacular. The medical community never, ever, ever, ever accepted her, recognized her,
mm-hmm.
or admitted that she was able to do what she did, but she did. Annette Bunnell is the Sister Kenny of today. In my day, it was polio. Now it's learning disorders. And we have this voice, another woman, who comes out of nowhere, and she says, we've got to go back to nature. Here's how we can do it. Here's what I recommend. Here's what I do. And she's getting the same kind of results Sister Kenny did with polio. She's turning these kids around. So I'm really emphasizing what Annette Bunnell has been able to do. And if you have this problem in your home, please get a hold of her, or at least the book, or at least practitioners of her method. It's just spectacular. Another little goodie I want to mention before I go on to another biggie is that these children that are put on drugs right away, let's say the age of 6 or 7 or 8, you know, ADHD, ADD, certainly some of them need it, most of them don't. What we're finding now is that some of these kids, a lot of them, in fact, are now grown. You know, they've grown up with these drugs. And what we're finding with these kids is they don't know what love is.
Oh, my.
You know, that should do a little ting in the brain.
Yeah.
A book you want to read on this, and it's by one of these kids who's now grown. It's called Dosed, D-O-S-E-D, Dosed, uh-huh. the secondary title, The Medication Generation Grows Up. It is very sobering. It is by Kathleen, K-A-I-T-L-I-N, Kathleen Bell Barnett. The title again, Dosed, The Medication Generation Goes Up. Grows Up. And it's very much about lost youth.
Yeah.
They are growing up looking at a line of pill bottles that they have to take. These are kids who take meds at a very young age and continue to take them, and they grow up. They're not taking the meds anymore, but they're left with this incredible drama that they lost their childhood, and they don't understand or feel, most of them, what love is. So this is very sobering. We've got to look at this. We've got to find another way of handling these kids. Well, you know, among the things I tackle in the book, the amazing fives that are going on, of course. This is the fifth world, the fifth root race, all of these fives that are taking place or just being accepted or used. Since 1982, you know, we now know that the fifth element is ether. You know, there's let's see, the various elements. You know, we recognize. Let's see if I can flip to the various elements right away. And the various elements that we have, we now know the basic elements. The fifth one is ether. Now, ether is the realm of patterns and causality. It's where the Akashic records are supposedly kept or exist. We now know that the fifth element, ether, is real. The fifth chakra, which is willpower, is being emphasized more than ever before. We now know that the heart is the fifth brain, literally. The majority of cells in the heart are neural cells. The heart creates an electromagnetic field around us that is identical to that of the earth. It produces an electrical field 1,000 times greater than that of the brain, a magnetic field, 5,000 times greater than the brain. It's just incredible what the heart does. We now have the science of neurocardiology that recognizes the heart as the fifth brain. But we now know through testing that the heart will pick up what's going to happen before it does. In other words, the heart can pick up the future about, 20, 25 seconds, maybe 40 seconds before it occurs, maybe a couple of minutes before it occurs. That literally our heart is our first responder. The heart gets it first and then signals the brain. So it's not our brain necessarily or our intuition. You know, we may even have to redefine what we mean by intuition, because it's the heart that is so intuitive, and it's because it's so full of these neural cells, and it just picks this stuff up right away and signals us, the fifth communication wave, which is personal computers. We now know that, we have five basic forces instead of one. We used to think it was electromagnetism, gravity, strong nuclear force, weak nuclear force. Aha! We now know there's torsion waves. Torsion waves are influenced by consciousness. Mm-hmm. They are the information carriers. They ensure that nothing is ever lost. So we're getting into all these fives, one right after another. But the one stunner that we'll probably go out on is the second homogenesine. The second homogenesine has already begun. We can't stop it, folks. It's already begun. This is
so
5 centuries
that.
After the first one. Okay, I will. A homogenesine is all kinds of unlike forces, qualities, ingredients, whatever, that come together to form one basic package, if you will. The first one that our planet ever knew, that we know of, and certainly science tells us, the first one occurred after Columbus stepped into our hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
The first homogenesine after the time of the dinosaurs was caused by Columbus. If you want to check this, read the book 1493 by Charles C. Mann. Within 100, it wasn't just Columbus that set foot in our hemisphere. It's all of the bugs that came with him, and all the rats, and all the malaria, and all the diseases, and all of the other stuff that came with he and his men and the boat. Just from that, within 100 years of that happening, you can trace it back. This book, 1493, traces it back for you.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 5 people across the world died because of Christopher Columbus. They died from diseases he brought over, multiple types of slavery, brutal working conditions, industrialization, hunger, environmental destruction. However, because of this incredible convolution that occurred, we had the birth of the modern age, the birth of the modern world. Without something like this, this is the positive part, without something
mm-hmm.
like this, the modern world as we have it now would never have existed. It took something that incredible, that horrible, that wonderful to occur to turn the whole world around. Okay,
yeah.
We now have our second one. It has begun.
Yeah.
5 centuries after Columbus. This one, I believe, was started by Monsanto and companies
wow.
like Monsanto.
Yes.
Because of core changes happening to the genetics of every
yes.
human being, of every plant, everything. The core genetics of the world is now changing because of what Monsanto started. And this kind of convolution, it's just like what happened because of Columbus. It's going to change absolutely everything. That combined with the digital age, skyrocketing drug and alcohol addiction, and too much ionizing radiation. The key here is to maintain as much diversity as possible.
Yeah.
That's what's going to help us to control this as much as possible or keep down the negative after effects as much as possible. I don't think we're going to have the die-off that we did with the first homogenocene, but what I'm recognizing is that we are and will continue to have the changes in the brain, these learning disorders that are changing our children in a huge level, in a huge way. How we respond to that, I believe we're being thrust to redefine everything on every level in order to save our children.
Yeah.
And this, I believe, will take us to a unified world. Christopher Columbus brought us to the modern world. What's happening now, we all decry Monsanto and the like.
That's true.
But
yeah.
Eventually that's going to bring us to a unified world.
It's just an example of negative energies coming out in a positive way, ultimately.
Yeah.
And let me say, we only have a couple minutes left. We've gone right down to the end, although it doesn't cut us off exactly. We can go into the podcast. But I do want to give you an opportunity for the live audience, certainly, who will be leaving us, and we'll be wrapping up here anyway, that I want to note again your website, pmhatwater.com. And I also want to thank you very much from my heart. You walk the walk in so many ways, PMH. I feel that you have allowed your intelligence to come forward. You are so brilliant, and yet you are a person of heart. You're allowing that heart to work overtime, and we are all benefiting from that. So from my heart to yours, a sincere thank you for being on the show again.
And thank you for all you're doing with your show. It's incredibly important.
Oh, thank you so much. And it's been so exciting, PMH, because it's getting national exposure now. And, it's all the dreams that I've had for it, just so I can bring wonderful people like you to as many people as possible out there.
Well, keep going, dear.
Well, I intend to, and let me remind people, you will be coming back to the show. I had this right in front of me. Here it is. Your next appearance we have scheduled is June 27th at 11 a.m.
Wow.
Pacific, same time as today. And we're going to talk about near-death experiences, the rest of the story. And so I'm very much looking forward to that.
Okay. Thank you again.
It's
a reminder. Thank you.
Yes, yes, I'll remind
Bye-bye
you.
Bye-bye to everybody.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, everyone. And then just in our final moments here, and as we go into the podcast, I want to note the next show is Tuesday, May 28th with Dr. Alan Hunter. He will be returning to the show, very inspiring and prolific spiritual author, and we will be talking about living in the heart space, very appropriate following today's show. So be sure to be with us next Tuesday, May 28th at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern for Dr. Hunter. And with that said, I do want to thank the entire community around this show. I really feel that it is a co-creation. And I also want to remind you that if you want to learn about all the archived broadcasts going back for 2.5 years, some of which are kind of hidden gems out there, so I would recommend that you look back at the archived broadcasts. You can learn about all that at frontierbeyondfear.com. And that's also where I will talk about upcoming broadcasts and any announcements related to the show. And it's also a place where you can support the broadcast should you feel led to do so. And I very much welcome that if you feel so guided. So thank you so much, everyone. And I hope that you will spend time reflecting upon the many things that were brought forward today. I know I will. There are just so many interesting things worthy of further research. And I also want to end this by once again saying that our heart does really go out to the people in Oklahoma, as well as the people remembering in Joplin all that has passed in the last 2 years. And I hope that you can find hope in the early words of this conversation about the butterfly people, because I feel that there is tremendous hope and love in what happened there in Joplin, and I hope that's with us all today. So thank you again, everyone.